Lecture 3, Quantum Cosmology. In my third lecture, I shall turn to cosmology. Cosmology used to be considered a pseudoscience and the preserve of physicists who might have done useful work in their earlier years, but who had gone mystic in their dotage. There were two reasons for this. The first was that there was an almost total absence of reliable observations. Indeed, until the 1920s, about the only important cosmological observation was that the sky at night is dark. But people didn't appreciate the significance of this. However, in recent years, the range and quality of cosmological observations has improved enormously with developments in technology. So this objection against regarding cosmology as a science, that it doesn't have an observational basis, is no longer valid. There is, however, a second and more serious objection. Cosmology cannot predict anything about the universe unless it makes some assumption about the initial conditions. Without such an assumption, all one can say is that things are as they are now because they were as they were at an earlier stage. Yet many people believe that science should be concerned only with the local laws which govern how the universe evolves in time. They would feel that the boundary conditions for the universe that determine how the universe began were a question for metaphysics or religion rather than science. The situation was made worse by the theorems that Roger Penrose and I proved. These showed that according to general relativity, there should be a singularity in our past. At this singularity, the field equations could not be defined. Thus, classical general relativity brings about its own downfall. It predicts that it can't predict the universe. Although many people welcomed this conclusion, it has always profoundly disturbed me. If the laws of physics could break down at the beginning of the universe, why couldn't they break down anywhere? In quantum theory, it is a principle that anything can happen if it is not absolutely forbidden. Once one allows that singular histories could take part in the path integral, they could occur anywhere and predictability would disappear completely. If the laws of physics break down at singularities, they could break down anywhere. The only way to have a scientific theory is if the laws of physics hold everywhere, including at the beginning of the universe. One can regard this as a triumph for the principles of democracy. Why should the beginning of the universe be exempt from the laws that apply to other points? If all points are equal, one can't allow some to be more equal than others. We observe that the universe contains matter, and we deduce from the microwave background and the abundance of light elements that it must have been much hotter and denser in the past. The simplest scheme that is consistent with our observations is called the hot Big Bang model. In this scenario, the universe starts at a singularity filled with radiation at an infinite temperature. As it expands, the radiation cools and its energy density goes down. Eventually, the energy density of the radiation becomes less than that of the density of the non-relativistic matter, and the expansion becomes matter-dominated. However, we can still observe the remains of the radiation in a background of microwave radiation at a temperature of about 3 degrees Kelvin above absolute zero. The trouble with the hot Big Bang model is the trouble with all cosmology that has no theory of initial conditions. It has no predictive power. Because general relativity would break down at a singularity, anything could come out of the Big Bang. So why is the universe so homogeneous and isotropic on a large scale, yet has local irregularities such as galaxies and stars? And why is the universe so close to the dividing line between collapsing again and expanding indefinitely? In order to be as close as we are now, the rate of expansion early on had to be chosen fantastically accurately. If the rate of expansion 1 second after the Big Bang had been less by 1 part in 10 billion, the universe would have collapsed after a few million years. If it had been greater by 1 part in 10 billion, the universe would have been essentially empty after a few million years. In neither case would it have lasted long enough for life to develop. Thus, one either has to appeal to the anthropic principle or find some physical explanation of why the universe is the way it is. The hot Big Bang model does not explain why, 1, the universe is nearly homogeneous and isotropic, but with small perturbations, 2. The universe is expanding at almost exactly the critical rate to avoid collapsing again. Some people have claimed that what is called inflation removes the need for a theory of initial conditions. The idea is that the universe could start out at the Big Bang in almost any state. In those parts of the universe in which conditions were suitable, there would be a period of exponential expansion called inflation. Not only could this increase the size of the region by an enormous factor of 10 to the 30th power or more, it would also leave the region homogeneous and isotropic and expanding at just the critical rate to avoid collapsing again. The claim would be that intelligent life would develop only in regions that inflated. We should not, therefore, be surprised that our region is homogeneous and isotropic and is expanding at just the critical rate. However, inflation alone cannot explain the present state of the universe. One can see this by taking any state for the universe now and running it back in time. Providing it contains enough matter, the singularity theorems will imply that there was a singularity in the past. One can choose the initial conditions of the universe at the Big Bang to be the initial conditions of this model. In this way, one can show that arbitrary initial conditions at the Big Bang can lead to any state now. One can't even argue that most initial states lead to a state like we observe today. The natural measure of both the initial conditions that do lead to a universe like ours and those that don't is infinite. One can't therefore claim that one is bigger than the other. I will end this lecture on a topic on which Roger and I have very different views, the arrow of time. There is a very clear distinction between the forward and backward directions of time in our region of the universe. One only has to watch a film being run backward to see the difference. Instead of cups falling off tables and getting broken, they would mend themselves and jump back on the table. If only real life were like that. The local laws that physical fields obey are time symmetric. Thus, the observed difference between the past and the future must come from the boundary conditions of the universe. Let us take it that the universe is spatially closed and that it expands to a maximum size and collapses again. As Roger has emphasized, the universe will be very different at the two ends of this history. At what we call the beginning of the universe, it seems to have been very smooth and regular. However, when it collapses again, we expect it to be very disordered and irregular. Because there are so many more disordered configurations than ordered ones, this means that the initial conditions would have had to be chosen incredibly precisely. It seems, therefore, that there must be different boundary conditions at the two ends of time. At first I thought that the arguments about perturbations being in their ground state would apply at both ends of the expansion-contraction cycle. The universe would start smooth and ordered and would get more disordered and irregular as it expanded. However, I thought that it would have to return to a smooth and ordered state as it got smaller. This would have implied that the thermodynamic arrow of time would have to reverse in the contracting phase. Cups would mend themselves and jump back on the table. People would get younger, not older, as the universe got smaller again. It is not much good waiting for the universe to collapse again to return to our youth, because it will take too long. But if the arrow of time reverses when the universe contracts, it might also reverse inside black holes. However, I wouldn't recommend jumping into a black hole as a way of prolonging one's life. I wrote a paper claiming that the arrow of time would reverse when the universe contracted again. But after that, discussions with Don Page and Raymond LaFlamme convinced me that I had made my greatest mistake, or at least my greatest mistake in physics. The universe would not return to a smooth state in the collapse. This would mean that the arrow of time would not reverse. It would continue pointing in the same direction as in the expansion. How can the two ends of time be different? Why should perturbations be small at one end but not the other? The difference between the two ends comes from the fact that perturbations are heavily damped in the case of the first. However, the perturbations can be very large without being significantly damped in the case of the solution that expands and contracts again. This gives rise to the difference between the two ends of time that Roger has pointed out. At one end, the universe was very smooth and the vial tensor was very small. It could not, however, be exactly zero, for that would have been a violation of the uncertainty principle. Instead, there would have been small fluctuations that later grew into galaxies and bodies like us. By contrast, the universe would have been very irregular and chaotic at the other end of time, with a vial tensor that was typically large. This would explain the observed arrow of time and why cups fall off tables and break, rather than mend themselves and jump back on. As the arrow of time is not going to reverse, and as I have gone over time, I better draw my lecture to a close. I have emphasized what I consider the two most remarkable features that I have learned in my research on space and time. One, that gravity curls up space-time so that it has a beginning and an end. Two, that there is a deep connection between gravity and thermodynamics that arises because gravity itself determines the topology of the manifold on which it acts. The positive curvature of space-time produced singularities at which classical general relativity broke down. Cosmic censorship may shield us from black hole singularities, but we see the Big Bang in full frontal nakedness. Classical general relativity cannot predict how the universe will begin. However, quantum general relativity, together with the no-boundary proposal, predicts a universe like the one we observe and even seems to predict the observed spectrum of fluctuations in the microwave background. However, although the quantum theory restores the predictability that the classical theory lost, it does not do so completely. Because we cannot see the whole of space-time on account of black hole and cosmological event horizons, our observations are described by an ensemble of quantum states rather than by a single state. This introduces an extra level of unpredictability, but it may also be why the universe appears classical. To have removed predictability from physics and then to have put it back again, but in a reduced sense, is quite a success story. I rest my case.